is 241322 In Re 720 Livonia Developments. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Kevin Nash for the appellant. Your Honor, this appeal centers on the privity rules regarding the doctrine of res judicata. I read the rules that when you apply res judicata between a corporation and its principal, there's not an absolute rule that if there's a ruling against the principal, that goes against the corporation and vice versa.
Well, can you help me out as to why the rule wouldn't apply here in a case where this is not just the principal of a corporation or the majority owner or an executive, this is the sole member of the limited liability company? It's him, right?
It's him. He was the controlling member.
So why would we not apply? First of all, why would we not say he's in privity? But taking a step back, in the state court action, he's there. He brought that action in his own personal name. The state court wound up saying, "Oh well, you know, this money comes from Milhakim, and not from you," and decides the case against him on that grounds. Now, could he not have offered evidence in that proceeding to explain that Milhakim was him?
Well, that is the issue that I want to address. Okay. The company was not a party to the litigation.
Well, yes. But he was a party to the litigation.
Yes, he was a party.
Was it not, what prevented him from putting in evidence that that check effectively came from him because it comes from the corporate account, but he is the sole member of that corporation? What prevented him from doing that?
I believe he did that. He put in a copy of that check. It was acknowledged by both the defendant and the court. We accept the fact that $500,000 was received towards this project.
But did he point out or did he offer anything that indicated to the court that he was the only person who had any say about what Milhakim paid or didn't pay?
No, he didn't.
And that's the concern, I think.
And I appreciate the concern, but the reason that didn't happen is because it was acknowledged that the money was paid and received toward the project. In the unjust enrichment decision, that one aspect of the decision, the court said, even though he did testify he contributed the money, the court says, "I can't do anything about unjust enrichment because the company's not here." And so they left it at that. Obviously, he had an unjust enrichment claim, but it was determined, and it was kind of out of left field, that I cannot make the link of privity.
Yeah, but so you're basically saying that the judge in the state court got it wrong.
No, I think the judge in the state court didn't apply any privity analysis whatsoever.
He doesn't have to apply any privity analysis. The issue is what the state court had to do was decide whether this money should go back to the plaintiff. Right?
I don't know if you got it wrong. I think the decision says Milhakim's not here, so I'm not going to adjudicate Milhakim's rights. I think that's the import of that decision. They're not here. You're not the judge says, "You're not Milhakim, so I'm not going to adjudicate that right of a party not here." And that is the irony of this case. There was no privity between Milhakim and the principal in the state court, and yet the privity rules hit us in the face in the bankruptcy court because it was determined that once the company and the principal are together, that's an absolute privity argument. And that, what I think, is wrong. I think you have to look at it on a fact-by-fact basis. You have to get back into the Supreme Court tests and the exceptions. You have to get back into this court's analysis of whether or not there's adequate representation under the due process two-part test. And I don't think we have adequate representation. Landau cared about one thing, that he was a partner in the enterprise.
Well, he also cared about getting his $500,000 back. That was what he asked for.
No, no, there was a claim for unjust enrichment. There wasn't, but that claim was determined didn't belong to Landau.
And why couldn't he have brought the case in the first place as Landau and Malukin?
Whether he would, but that's not how you, in my mind.
No, that is how you do it. When it's claim preclusion, the issue is the earlier suit precludes a do-over for any claim that was or could have been brought in that same action.
But the way I understand the rules of due process is, was there adequate representation? Malukin was not a party. So I don't know. I don't think it was a maneuver that Malukin was not a party. I think Landau.
No, it's just a choice. Mr. Landau is the person who's the real party in interest. He brings this action, and he failed to litigate it well, I guess. He could have brought a claim. I mean, he has the authority to authorize a lawsuit by Malukin. He could have brought that in the first place. He didn't.
But the flip
side.
And then
he takes the consequences because he had this. He has one shot to do this.
But the flip side, in my mind, is the ruling of the state court was, I'm not saying Malukin is entitled to the money back. It actually said, assuming that there's unjust enrichment, the one that was lost on the enrichment was Malukin, and they're not here.
I suppose that sort of gets to the difference between issue preclusion and claim preclusion, right? If we were looking at issue preclusion, I think you'd clearly win because Malukin's entitlement to that wasn't adjudicated. But I think the question as to claim preclusion isn't whether the court adjudicated Malukin's interest. It's whether there was sufficient privity that we essentially hold the sole owner of the LLC accountable for asserting Malukin's interest in that.
And what happened here, you're holding him accountable for not only what he did, but what he didn't do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
That's what claim preclusion means.
I got it. But here is what I'm trying to indicate to you. Before you get to that, I think you do have to look at the due process and whether there was an adequacy of representation and whether they were aligned, the interests were aligned. That whole case.
Why weren't there? What was the conflict of interest between Landau and his own individually owned and operated limited liability company?
The difference was the Landau claim was based upon he's a partner, he made an investment, he was denied a partnership opportunity, he was a part owner of the property.
Well, but he did also make an adjustment enrichment claim, and
yes,
one of his prayers
did.
For relief was disgorgement of the $500,000.
And it wasn't fair for that. Well, and he probably would have won. That's the irony here. He would have won that claim.
Yeah.
But the court said Malukin's not here. He didn't say it's dismissed and Malukin doesn't have a claim as well. I think the implication is there. Malukin had that claim.
Well, but the argument then, or what your client easily could have said, is, but I am Malukin, and demonstrated that. I mean, he had both the opportunity and the motivation to do it, given that Malukin's loss was ultimately his loss.
I understand what you're saying. However, during the heat of the battle, in the trial, the acknowledgement was made that the $500 is received. It went to the project. It wasn't an issue. The trial focused upon the partnership dispute. After the fact, you get the decision, and the decision says on the $500,000, which was, conceded, sorry, that money is not here because Malukin's not a party. Now, I don't want to beat a dead horse. I view that as if I was in the state court, and again, there was a bankruptcy that cut off any further litigation, Malukin could have went right back into the state court and said, I have a claim. My claim is $500,000. The bankruptcy prevented that. But it wasn't.
But if he had done that, he would have been faced with the same claim preclusion issue in the state court that he faced in the federal court, which is you could have brought this up. You're splitting your claims here in a way that creates two cases when there was really only one.
Well, I understand you can't. We're saying you can't split claims. You can't have successive litigations. I accept all of that. I am not challenging that. You can't challenge that. What I am saying here is, look what really happened. The money is conceded. They get a decision out of left field somewhat that there is no reimbursement. Even though you're not a partner, even though you gave the money, there's no reimbursement. Why? Because Mnuchin's not a strictly a party. Now, the court could have said, yes.
The court went a little further. The court said, not only said because they're not a party, it's because the court said you haven't given us enough evidence to discern what their relationship is to this issue.
I thought it was just a little bit.
I'll tell you what, let's do this. I think we've got a good sense of your arguments at this point, and we're going to hear from you again. So why don't we let Attorney Pena argue next?
Good morning, Your Honors. Melissa Pena from the law firm Norris McLaughlin on behalf of the appellee 720 Livonia Operations, LLC. As Justice Lynch pointed out, this is a clear case of res judicata. There is no constitutional issue here under Taylor. There's no due process violation. Mr. Landau had every opportunity to name Mnuchin, his wholly owned limited liability company, as a plaintiff in the state court action.
Let me just step back. I understand the legal rules that apply here, but in the big picture, nobody's disputing that $500,000 were given to your client or some entity owned by your client for the purchase of this property with a quid pro quo, and the consequence of this sort of parsing of claim preclusion that we're doing here is that your client gets $500,000 free and clear, as I understand it, because somebody made a bad litigation choice in the state court. Is that a fair characterization of how this all sugars off?
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. The $500,000, the only evidence in the record was that it was provided to CS Construction, which was a member of one of the debtors. There is no evidence in the record that money was ever provided to the debtors, nor is there any evidence
in
the record.
There's a contract that was actually executed after the transfer of the money that says that money that has been paid is for purchase of this property for a partnership, and then the property gets purchased. Certainly one could infer that the $500,000 that was acknowledged in that contract as having been paid for the purchase of the property was, in fact, as acknowledged in the contract, paid for the purchase of that property without tracing the checks from account to account.
We would disagree, Your Honor. First of all, that contract was not between Mr. Landau and the debtors. It was between non-party Shaskel Strulovich, and there was no evidence in the record submitted to show that the money went towards this property. They had an ample opportunity in the connection with the bankruptcy case to take discovery on that issue. They could have subpoenaed the records from Mr. Strulovich. They could have subpoenaed the records from the Chapter 7 trustee. There's been no evidence to establish that the funds were given to the debtor or even utilized to purchase this property.
And I suppose you wouldn't claim that he's precluded from going after the entity to which the check was originally provided, since that isn't a debtor here in this bankruptcy.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. CS Construction was the entity that received the funds, and our position is that they would have no, we don't take the position that claim is waived as to CS Construction. But, you know, I don't think that there's a due process violation here. They had every opportunity to adjudicate this claim. And as Your Honor noted, the state court didn't just say your claim fails because Mnuchin is not here. The state court said, and this is at JA 164, no evidence was provided about the nature of Mnuchin Holdings LLC, but it is clearly not Chaim Landau, the only plaintiff in this action. So not only did they have the opportunity to name Mnuchin as a plaintiff in the state court, the action, they had the opportunity to present evidence of the relationship and that Mr. Landau caused Mnuchin, his wholly owned company, to fund the $500,000 on its behalf. The failure to do so bars them from proceeding now.
Right. And ultimately, while I appreciate your argument that this isn't so unfair for all the reasons that you've said, but the whole point of claim preclusion is to avoid our having to decide the correctness of those arguments that you made, because this is what happens with res judicata. Sometimes the first court got it wrong for whatever reason. And if it becomes a final judgment, it binds the parties and their privies.
Correct, Your Honor, and that was recognized by the bankruptcy court. Now, my colleague here says that no evidence was submitted concerning the relationship between Malukum and Mr. Landau because there was acknowledgement of the funds. But I want to parse something out here. There was no acknowledgement, nor can he point to anything in the record, as to the relationship between Malukum and Mr. Landau. So they had every incentive and should have submitted evidence as to that relationship. Unless Your Honors have any other further questions, we rely on our papers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just very briefly. I think it was well said. It was a poor litigation choice in terms of how this case was tried. And in retrospect, Malushin could have been a party. They weren't. And so the real issue before for res judicata is they weren't a party. They weren't adequately represented. They didn't control the litigation.
Well, when you say I don't understand this. You say they weren't a party. That's true. You say they weren't adequately represented. They were poorly represented. But they were represented by the only person who matters here, which is Mr. Landau. Right? I mean, this is not the case that we've got other shareholders or other people whose interests were somehow at odds with the person who controlled the litigation. There is nobody here except Mr. Landau.
Judge, I would just say to that, the cases I've seen and I know you've seen, they speak very clearly about the adequacy of the representation.
But the adequacy of the, excuse me, I'm sorry, I had to interrupt, but maybe this is what I'm focusing on and I'd like to hear you answer it. Adequacy of representation doesn't mean that the lawyer did a good job or not. Adequacy of representation means, is the person controlling that litigation someone with the same interests at heart?
But that's one aspect of it. I would say it's whether or not precautions were taken to protect that non-party's rights and whether there is a substantial opportunity to protect the non-party rights.
I think we understand.
Bad representation, inadequate representation. I understand what you're saying, but I hope you understand what I'm saying. It wasn't actually presented to the court. And the frustrating part, the whole case is frustrating. Malushin was the sole petitioning creditor. Without Malushin, you don't have a surplus. Very frustrating. It wasn't prevented, but the way I read that is, had Malushin come in the next day, which they couldn't because it was in the intervening bankruptcy, they would have got that $500,000 back. And that's where we are. We lost in the state court because they didn't find any privity. We lose in the bankruptcy court because they found privity. At the end of the day, the only entity that didn't get any payments out of this bankruptcy is the one that brought it and saved the day for creditors.
Yeah, I want to, one thing that you said, though, that I think is significant because it goes to the, I guess probably it would be issue preclusion. The state court didn't find that there was no privity. It didn't say evidence has been presented and based on this evidence we conclude that it's a distinct entity. The state court identified a failure of proof on the part of the party who bore the burden. The privity determination that was later made was then based on an actual record of evidence. So I'm not sure those two are as intention as they seem.
Well, we're all reading what a one line or one sentence line in the trial meant. I read it when he says, one thing is for sure, you're not, Malushin is not Landau. I read that meaning that I'm not accepting you. You are interchangeable, and Malushin's not here to make that claim.
But I thought you acknowledged that Mr. Landau didn't try to make the argument that he was Malushin.
Again, maybe another bad trial decision. Once they acknowledged it, and they did acknowledge it in the record on JA 130, where the court says there is an acknowledgement of $500,000 was paid, and then the attorney said, "Do you want copies of the checks?" And the court says, you don't need it. So they went on to what the focus of the case was about, was just the partnership dispute. So that's in the record. So, yes, Monday morning quarterbacking is great, okay? But when you apply res judicata, I think you need to meet all those various elements, and I don't think they were met here, but I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your arguments, both of you. We'll take this case under advisement.